Electric cars, busting myths, and smoking tires. That's the title of today's show. Next up on Inside the Black Box, where our guest will be Chris Campbell, Georgia Tech alum, WREK alum, correct?
Yep.
And, you know, all-around geek who I guess describes himself as an unbiased electric vehicle enthusiast. Is that a reasonable description?
That's right.
Okay. We like enthusiasts here. That's not a dirty word around here. Who's going to give us an update on what's happening with everything from charging standards to what we can expect in electric vehicles. In particular, some exciting news from the Tesla camp. Mm-hmm. And basically, that's what smoking tires referred to in today's title. So he was on the program about a year ago doing that, so we're going to get a little update from Chris. And that's next up on Inside the Black Box, science only funnier.
Right here on WREK Atlanta, 91.1 FM.
The opinions expressed on Inside the Black Box do not reflect those of WREK Radio or the Georgia Institute of Technology. All right, Pete Ludovic here for Inside the Black Box, and if I am hacking and coughing throughout, I don't think I'm contagious, so that's good news for our guest, Chris Campbell, and for
I don't
want
to get sick either. Yeah, that's fine.
I've been trying to shake this for weeks, and I thought I could last weekend, but I want to shout out to my fellow teammates from the Georgia Tech Chemical and Biomolecular Engineering team comprised of faculty and graduate students who won, Woo. Came in first place in the second annual Dixie 200. It's a continuous relay running race from Atlanta to Birmingham, Alabama.
Sounds like quite a race.
It is. I mean, so it basically goes like for 24 to 36 hours. Mm-hmm. Ours went a good 38 hours because we had about a five-hour rain delay in the middle of the night.
Is it actually a relay race or is it just everybody?
It's a relay race.
Okay,
right?
So you don't have to actually runs 200 miles.
So you have 12 people, they all run three legs, so there are 36 legs that are everything from 3 miles to maybe a little over 10 miles.
Wow. I'm sure some of the terrain differs too, so it's not all...
Oh, yeah, exactly. The some is more hilly. My first leg was quite hilly. Mm-hmm. Second leg was in the middle of the night next to a four-lane highway over rocks. It was absolutely horrible.
So this was basically like 24 hours, 36 hours straight. There was no
so
go to sleep,
straight,
pause.
Right. So people were just handing off a bracelet and they were moving along and doing that. So that's why if I'm hacking and coughing, it's because of that. Before we get into science and the news, let's introduce our guest who I mentioned in the teaser, was here last year to talk to us about electric vehicles. It's Chris Campbell, who got a master's degree in aerospace engineering.
Or
was it aeronautical? What was it back in 1990?
Aerospace
engineering.
Yeah. Have they changed the name now?
I started off that way, actually.
Right. So bachelor's degree in aerospace engineering in 1990, a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering in 1996.
That's right.
He is a professional engineer licensed in the state of Georgia and works on satellite communications engineering, first for Scientific Atlanta for 5 years and now for the last 11 years for Turner Broadcasting. And in the middle of his illustrious career, he was came back to REC as a volunteer and was interim chief engineer.
That's right. From, let's see, 99 to 2002. This is at the old studio.
Yeah.
REC was actually falling apart.
A tougher job then.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of duct tape was involved.
Yeah, that was back at the annex, right, beneath the stadium?
Right. That's right. Before 2004, REC was over at next to the Coliseum. And but we really had to rebuild the station. So what you're using today, all that digital automation stuff, audio vault, all this stuff was we built that.
And we're actually rebuilding it currently. So hopefully we'll finally step up about 10 years later, a little bit longer. But that's why your name was familiar to me. So I was like, Chris Campbell.
It was pretty cool. They after me and the two other guys, Jim Evans, who you probably know, who's still involved here, and Dave Slusher. The three of us rebuilt the place, and they've actually put a plaque on the wall with our names on it.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Sweet. You know, but Chris has the cut of his jib is like that of a typical engineer here, right? Knowledgeable, confident, a little bit nerdy, the kind of guy that, you know, with some baling wire and some duct tape could probably build a nuclear submarine.
And criticizes everything. I first came to the studio, the previous op was on, and I immediately said, "Oh, your levels are too hot."
Oh, okay. And you didn't even look at his level meter. You could just tell. You could sense it from outside the soundproof glass.
I feel the bits screaming back at me.
All right, but you're not so bad. And even our current engineer and our previous engineer, we've had some guys before that were just like, nothing's right.
Well, this is Rec. It's a little bit different, a little bit more towards normalcy, I'd say. Mm-hmm.
Is it really?
Yeah, I think so.
Rec is normal?
Well, in a world scheme of things, I wouldn't say on a tech level.
Well, no, that's exactly what I would say. On a tech level, you people are much more normal than your average undergrad at tech.
Well, thank you.
The average undergrad at tech is a little uptight, a little conservative, doesn't like to get out there and mix it up, and do things just because they're interesting, whether it's radio or electric cars. Here, people like to experience things. Mm-hmm. A lot of my students, they're just like, well, I don't want to go outside. Something might happen.
The sun's up. Oh, no.
All right, so before we get to an update on electric vehicles, let's begin the program as we often do with...
Science in the News.
And today's Science in the News, I actually selected because it's relevant to the summer reading program from last year for the Georgia Tech freshmen. Many of them read a very interesting book by Rebecca Skloot called The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, and it actually details the life of this very nice woman who had a number of kids and died of cervical cancer. But they sampled her cervical tumor before they actually did radiation treatments, and that's back when they used to sew the radioactive material right inside you. Maybe not the most robust approach to things. They sampled her tumor, and because they were cancer cells, it became the first and now most widely used immortal cell line. That means they can keep culturing it over and over and over again, and they abbreviate Henrietta Lacks as HeLa. So if you've ever heard anyone working with HeLa cells, it's very common. And we use HeLa cells for almost everything. In fact, the article I'm looking at here points out that a lot of researchers get HeLa contaminating their cell lines. But without HeLa, we would know much less about how to treat cancer. And actually, on March 11th, the European Molecular Biology Laboratory issued a press release proudly announcing that a research team there had deciphered much of the genetic sequence of this widely used cell line in cancer studies, and it made the information available publicly. But EMBL has now withdrawn the data and apologized for a perceived ethical lapse, as it seems to allay concerns that it violated the privacy of the woman who was the original source. Hmm. And think about it, you know, reading a sequence, it's like reading The Matrix. It's not like, you know, it's, oh, hey, you know, she partied a lot in high school. You can't get that information out of it. But you look at enough codons and you can actually look at mutations and decide that certain ones of her descendants might be lacking this gene, that gene. They might have a predisposition for this disease, that disease. And in theory, you'd think no one would do something with it. But an insurance company or someone that was going to work with you might say, I don't want to work with, you know, her descendants because I think they have a propensity for this. This is a real serious issue now. And probably the reason they had the lapse is because now that we have Institute Review
lapse.
Board. Yeah, the privacy lapse. Now that we have Institute Review Board reviews for human subjects and animal research protocols, this is all tightly controlled. You cannot release this information. But the original HeLa cells were the result of the worst violation of privacy ever. And that's actually what this is book about. Mm-hmm. The book's also about just Henrietta Lacks' family. It's actually a fascinating read. And if you get a chance to take a look at it, I highly recommend it. I enjoyed it.
Is this like a Tuskegee situation where they were doing...
it's kind of like Tuskegee, not quite as bad as Tuskegee. Mm-hmm. So Tuskegee, you know, they injected people with bad things. Mm-hmm. That is immoral on every level. Here, they simply sampled her tumor, and then they treated her for this cancer the best way they could back then, and they were unable to overcome the cancer, and she died, which is unfortunate. So they just took a tiny little bit of cellular material. So most of us probably wouldn't care. Mm-hmm. But because, you know, insurance companies and information, you can get into sticky ethical things. You're just not allowed to do it. And now, believe it or not, the book has made her and her descendants and family famous. And I don't think anyone's losing insurance over this. But just to make sure, it is a very interesting thing. So privacy laws have changed a lot in the last 30, 40 years. And thank goodness for it, because someday they're going to make baldness illegal and I'm in big trouble. I keep waiting for the National Science Foundation to make an underrepresented minority so I can check that box in the front.
Bald.
And so, well, Pete's they would call it follically challenged.
Well, you know, historically, male medical problems tend to get more funding than female. So absolutely. You can look forward to a solution.
Absolutely.
I mean, there are some things, but they don't quite work so well right now.
And ironically, I just spoke on the phone. I'm doing a show out in Seattle in a couple of weeks, and I contacted a friend of mine who's in biotech to sort of help me promote this. He's with the American Chemical Society out there, and he worked for the company that made Cialis. He was on the program about 3 years ago, and basically that is a story of inventing a treatment for something that's not necessarily a disease. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think erectile dysfunction is just God's way of saying, look, you're old.
Stop
Set
it.
This one out. That's basically...
You're done for now.
But in any case, you're absolutely right. And that could be an entire show in and of itself. But we are here to talk about electrical vehicles. So you've talked about it once before, but let's start by recapping just basic electric vehicle technology, some of the issues, and some of the myths you say are propagated out there.
So any conversation about electric cars, you have to talk about what is fundamentally different about electric car. First of all, it's still just a car. You know, that four wheels, got a steering wheel. It goes down the road. It goes highway speeds, whatever. But what's fundamentally different is that powertrain. That you have an electric motor in there and a battery instead of a gas engine at a gas tank. And that having electric motor in there fundamentally changes things because electric motors are fundamentally different from internal combustion engines. Mm-hmm. And it gets into... the technology of, you know, an internal combustion engine has pistons and has clutches and gears, and it has all of that because one key limitation of internal combustion engines, which is they can't go zero RPM. Mm-hmm. You can't have an engine has to idle at some minimum RPM, usually like 750 RPM, maybe 1,000 RPM. Between there and zero is a here shall be there be dragons. You know, you cannot go in between. You're either at a minimum RPM or you're off.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so that's why, you know, cars idle at stoplights. That's why you have gears. And you have shifting gears, gears to shift the transmission. You have clutch. You have all this transmission mechanism because of that limitation. Fundamentally, electric motors don't have that RPM limitation. They can go 700 RPM, 2 RPM, 0.5 right. RPM. They can right. creep. And so you don't have... mm-hmm. So that changes... a lot of the drivetrain, so you don't need gears. There are some electric cars that typically hobbyist kind of cars where they want extreme performance. They'll go ahead and put right. gears in there.
Right.
But usually it's just a motor and a drive shaft connected to wheels, and that's it. I mean, there's no clutching or anything like that in between.
Well, so let's think about why that is. And you have a degree in electrical engineering, so hopefully you can explain it to me. If you think about an electric motor, right? You know, whether it's a generator or a motor, it's just one running backwards, right? I take advantage of the curl operator in Maxwell's equations.
In EE, we call it a rotating machine, and the rotating machine can be either a motor or generator, but it's still just a rotating machine.
Right, right, exactly. So basically, you... you know, throw a current through this thing and the magnetic fields that are sort of perpendicular to this sort of thing get this thing moving. And if it's not moving at all, right? In fact, it could not be moving at all. It could mm-hmm. literally be zero RPM. You just mm-hmm. stop it. You can push the full force of that electromagnetic force on it and it will start going right away. Mm-hmm. Whereas with an internal combustion engine, you are depending on a certain rate at which this stuff is firing, right? Mm-hmm. So it can't just immediately at zero put all that stuff in there.
Yeah. You have to get that in an internal combustion engine. You have to get that whole thing, machine rotating before that whole spark and, you know, four cycle piston, you know, that process starts to work. Whereas in a electric machine, a rotating machine, electric motor, you can use three phases and these kind of phased signals going into the motor to kind of gently creep one way or the other.
Yeah. Whereas if you just sort of, you know, grab hold of the pistons and just stop a motor, that's it. You're done. It's stalling. It's not going anywhere.
And you need an electric motor to start it up again.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we do. So the interesting thing is that, I used to read for the longest time, GE, always a very profitable company. For a while, GE always has... some things that are profitable so that it can speculate on all sorts of other weird things. And for the longest time, GE makes a lot of the diesel locomotives in this country and in other countries. And they make a pretty penny on this. And these are very sophisticated pieces of equipment. And I once learned from them that they burn diesel fuel, but the diesel fuel actually powers an electric motor to get them going. Mm-hmm. Right? So there's actually...
It's a generator.
Yeah, exactly. So do they do that... because they like this torque, these torque properties of starting very low.
You're starting at a zero speed, and
you need a huge torque to get this thing
moving. They don't want to use a clutch to do that.
Okay.
So I equate a diesel locomotive, diesel electric locomotive, to an electric car. Mm-hmm. It's similar with horrible throttle response.
Okay.
You press the throttle, and the thing's going to, generator's going to spin up. Right. They don't have... I believe they typically don't have large batteries in there to buffer it.
Right.
So they're not pulling off a battery. So they're waiting for that generator to come up, produce power, and drive the motors, which are of course, basically hub mounted. They're in what are called the trucks diesel generators, or the down coaxial with the wheels.
Right. So, but if you think about it, if you didn't have an electric motor to do that, a typical car has, 3 to 6 gears, something like that. Mm-hmm. A tractor trailer has like 17, 18, something like that. Mm-hmm. You're pulling a 10-mile-long train or whatever the heck it is. What would that thing have? 5,000 gears or something? It would just be obscene to crank that torque up piece by piece. So an electric motor...
And you have to solve the clutch problem. I mean, you're still having use a clutch to get this thing from zero to moving.
Yeah, and you would burn that sucker out, I would think, shifting through 5,000 gears or something like that. But, so what you're saying is it's this low-end torque thing that is an advantage for both these sorts of systems.
Yeah, and the low-end torque is just to jump ahead a bit, is... pardon the pun, is electrifying. It is so much fun.
Ooh, I like
because
that.
These cars just leap off the line. I have what often gets compared to a Prius, but it's not. I mean, it's a fun car. I like being on that stoplight next to Mustangs because they don't know what's about to hit them.
Primarily because you get instant full torque. Right. You hit the gas pedal.
You drive 100%. A Chevy Volt.
I have a Chevy Volt. And there's two fundamentals there. First, you have the torque right away. Well, I'm not making any noise, so that's another thing. They don't realize that I can't rev my engine. I actually have an MP3 on my phone that I can play in my stereo. Crank up it's like a V12 race engine that I can play through my stereo to rev the engine.
Are people looking at that? Are people looking at a subwoofer under your hood just to make it sound cool?
I expect that eventually we'll have aftermarket things like that. Same way you can get a horn where it plays da 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 da
when you press
the horn. I think that'll come out eventually. That's a whole other thing about sound and electric cars. But there's two things. I mean, you have the full torque, you can leap off the line. But the second thing is he's got to shift from first to second at some point, and I don't. I just keep pulling all the way through.
Right.
So eventually he'll drop back. Now I should not I shouldn't overstate it. A Chevy Volt is not going to beat a 500 horsepower Cobra Mustang.
Okay.
But a Tesla will. I mean, Teslas will beat almost anything on the road.
Right.
These are really just incredibly exciting cars to drive.
But what you are saying is, perhaps the Chevy Volt may be your typical mid to small size production car.
Mm-hmm.
That's, got a decent, but it's a 4-cylinder engine, so it's not going anywhere.
My other question, though, is like, okay, so in most gasoline engines, diesel engines, there's like an upper limit to RPMs.
Mm-hmm.
On an electric motor, can you just kind of keep going?
So electric motor, they do have a top RPM, and that is because there's no gears involved for a second, third, fourth gear. When they design that drivetrain, they pick a top speed.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Which is, so there is an RPM limit. I think in my car, it's 15,000 RPM. And using the gear ratios, they picked... in my car, they actually limit it at 101 miles per hour. So they just pick the gear ratios based on that math. But then from that 101 down to zero, back to 101, it is a single gear train. It just
so what's going to happen in the future probably is instead of buying like new engines, bigger engines, you just buy different gear ratios. So like today I have my gear ratio that was 101. Tomorrow I can put in one that has 140.
Of course, the trade-off there is that when you do that, you're losing torque throughout that whole band.
Ah, okay.
Mm-hmm. So that's always been the trade-off it's what's called a tall gear ratio. You use tall gear ratio, you can go at a higher speed, but now you've got less power effectively to play with at the low end. And that's what the performance guys, they'll keep using gears. Like there's a conversion house on the east side of town called Thormac Engineering. They do a Porsche conversion, and they're still using gears. Because they want that monster torque, and they want it, they want to chirp the gears at second and third gear, and they want to really chirp the wheels,
Mm-hmm.
So those are really performance cars.
All right, well, let's take a quick break and we come back. Let's at least define this word we've used at least 17 times for our audience. That would be torque. And then move on to some of the myths that are currently propagating out there. And if you're listening to us live, Wednesdays, noon to 1, and I have a question or comment for Chris about electric vehicles and what's happening with those nowadays, by all means, give us a call here at the studio at 404-894-2468. Once again, that number, 404-894-2468. We'll be right back with Inside the Black Box, science only funnier.
For over 35 years, the Stonehenge Show on WREK 91.1 FM has brought the very finest underground classic rock to lovers of the music you never hear on commercial radio. Stonehenge begins at 8 p.m. every Friday night with the classic rock album of the week. Then we kick off the weekend in fine style with more than 3 hours of the finest rock music in the cosmos. Stonehenge, putting the class back into classic rock.
The following is a public service announcement brought to you by the staff of WREK Atlanta. Too much exposure to sunlight may increase your risk for vision damage. The American Academy of Ophthalmology reminds you to be eye smart in the sun and wear sunglasses with a UV 400 or 100% UV protection label. Visit geteyesmart.org for more tips on protecting your eyes.
Lost in the Stacks is the one and only Research Library rock and roll radio show. Every Friday at noon, your hosts, Amit and Charlie, free associate an hour of music, interviews, and library talk. You'll hear indie rock, pop rock, alt rock, new wave, and the occasional oddity. In between, interviews with students, faculty, and librarians. That's every Friday at noon, right here on WREK Atlanta.
Welcome back to Inside the Black Box, where we're talking with unbiased electric vehicle enthusiast and Georgia Tech alum Chris Campbell about the amazing low-end torque in electric vehicles. Mm-hmm. So just think of it as Jeopardy. You need to answer in the form of a question. What is torque?
It's basically twisting power. Power is...
Oh, I like that, twisting power. That is really good.
So power... is the ability to do work. It's pushing something. Mm-hmm. It's like pushing something through some sand. Right? It takes some energy to push something.
Right.
Whereas torque is the rotational version of that same of power. And one way to describe torque, I use the broom handle analogy. If you have a broom and you're holding it in so you're balancing it on your hand. So you got half of the broom handle on one side and half on the other side, and you're holding it and balancing on your hand, holding it up, maybe it weighs 5 pounds. Now imagine if you were holding that same broom in the air with one hand and holding it at the end of the handle, you're still holding 5 pounds in the air, but you're also having to twist your wrist really hard to hold that other end of the free end of the broom up. So your arm is doing two things then. It's holding the weight up, but it's also having to twist, and that twist is torque.
It's a torque.
And there's some math involved where you take the 5 pounds of the weight and maybe 2 feet to the end of the broomstick, and so that's, you know, 5 times 2, and, you know, there's unit conversion. Right. Well, that's what torque is. Torque is that twisting.
Right, so applying this force that's going to accelerate your car gets accelerated along some turning drivetrain, so that's why torque is so important for motorheads and things like that.
And a wheel, of course, is what... the drivetrain has torque running through it as either the gas engine or the electric motor twisting something that's going through transmission, twisting the axle, finally twisting the wheel, and the wheel is what finally turns that twisting energy into linear energy, linear power.
Right. So what about some of these myths about electric cars?
So the number one myth I always have to swat down is the myth of the long tailpipe, because people will say, well, electric vehicles are, you know, we hear that they're efficient and clean, but you're just transferring, transferring the point of pollution. Instead of polluting out the back end of the car, you're polluting at the power plant. But the key is that even if you count the power plant emissions, electric cars are still cleaner. So you can do something, and lots of people have over the past decade, done what's called a well-to-wheels mm-hmm. analysis,
right.
which is you start with the fossil fuel coming out of the ground, and you either run it through the gas engine process, which is you have a tanker, you send it across the globe, you run it through a refinery, right. goes to your gas station, goes into your gas tank, and burns in the car. That has emissions at various points in the process, a large share of it at your car itself. Versus you take that same fuel and you take it to a power plant and burn it there, and then transmit the energy over power lines, goes into your battery in your car, and then later on gets used by the motor. You take those two paths and compare them in comparable cars, a gas car and a comparable electric vehicle, and electric vehicle is cleaner, even if you have the dirty power that we have here in the South. If you have the dirtiest power, it's dirty coal, not just coal, but dirty coal. Now, that's the worst case scenario for the electric car, which is dirty power, coal.
Right.
Now you start putting in some realities, which is we don't have pure dirty power here in the South. Right. We have a nuclear mix in there.
Yeah.
And the grid continues to get cleaner every year because we add more and more renewable.
Right.
One flip side of that is gas cars are actually getting more and more efficient. You know, we're mm-hmm. 30 miles per gallon is commonplace now. So you have that on the other side. But if you take comparable EVs, comparable cars, an EV versus a gas car, the EV will win that competition.
Right.
There has been, there was actually a series of op-eds in the AJC last week talking about this where one guy, so they kind of had the pros and cons. And the AJC invited me to write an op-ed about electric cars, and they also had somebody from the city writing about it, and they also had somebody from the Reason Foundation, the libertarian organization. And one of the things he said was that this isn't true. The electric cars are not cleaner. And what you get into is a matter of there's lots of different cars on the market. Different cars have different emissions. You know, you have sports cars, you have the Prius. Now, the same is true for electric cars. You have very efficient electric cars and not so efficient electric cars. But they're at different points. You think of it like a cloud of dots on a graph.
Right.
And generally the cloud of dots for the gas cars is the low end, and the cloud of dots for the electric cars is higher.
And there is some overlap. It's a complicated system, but you can see that
cars.
Graphically, yeah.
But if you're comparing comparable cars, for sure, there's no contest. Right. And then you start getting into, even if you're comparing so-called comparable cars, that torque, low-end torque experience makes it a much more fun car to drive. Mm-hmm.
So you're saying the former chief engineer of REC, with the two engineering degrees from fun.
Yes.
Okay. All right, that's good.
And if you go to the auto show on Saturday.
This is the Georgia Tech auto show.
Georgia Tech auto show happening here on campus. You'll see lots of Georgia Tech guys who really care a lot about the fun. You know, they got the big muscle cars, and we'll have some electric cars.
But you sound as though you also care about the environmental impact.
Yeah.
Okay.
I might be a little bit of a hypocrite here because, I mean, every car I had the car I had before this was a performance car, and it got 20 miles per gallon, and I drove it so that it got 18. I have a lead foot, and that was one of the things I was waiting for with electric cars, for them to be fun to drive, and I wasn't really having to trade off and make really, compromise there because there's so much fun.
You really want that zoom. You don't want the whole like golf cart kind of like I'm sort of accelerating.
Right, and that's actually myth number two is is the golf cart myth. It's like, they're just a little whiny little cars that kind of wheeze down the road, and they're not. You just have to get in one and drive it, and you'll be like, I've had this experience a lot of times. I'll take people out to lunch in the car, and they'll be like, and they're just kind of not been interested. And then I'll get them in the car, and I'll punch the accelerator, and suddenly they're like, tell me about this car again. And they're suddenly I've got their attention.
Yeah.
And I press their head into the headrest. Mm-hmm.
But if you think about this, and we're going to talk about the Tesla cars in a little bit, mm-hmm. if you get these really high end electric cars and punch them, is their torque beyond the limit of any drag coefficient of friction of tires? I could see, if you just let it all hang out, that you can't. There is no production tire now that could actually do that.
And that's what you see at the drag step. So dragsters are You know, these gigantic sticky wheels that lose rubber like crazy. That's part of the drivetrain. That's part of the design trade-off, is they have to put in tires that will stick to the road, but that don't, you know, run out after 10,000 miles.
Right.
You've worn all the sticky rubber.
Do people drag race electric cars yet?
Oh, yeah.
They do?
Okay, so here's
something. I did not know that.
I just pulled up videos, actually.
Niche number three.
You need to Google white zombie. Okay. White zombie is this guy in the Pacific Northwest who took an old Datsun sedan, and he did this like 10 years ago, and did a conversion on it. And he takes it to drag strips and embarrasses, you know, this hopped up Camaro funny car looking things. And it's a surreal experience, especially when you have two electric cars racing each other, because there's no sound.
Yeah.
You have this slight whine where it just kind of hisses off into the distance. But, you know, the crowd is just like, okay, that was a 10-second quarter mile. I guess I'm supposed to clap. There's no noise to tell me to cheer.
We think it's over now, as opposed to the whole, like, build up and then take
10
off.
10-second quarter mile. Storm
and drawing.
I mean, 10-second, what was I? I was out in San Jose for a meeting, and I was watching my colleague who I was sharing a hotel with him. He had this sports channel on, and it was this thing where people just bring their cars and they got three Yahoos betting on who's going to finish first, and they run these things. 10-second quarter mile is fast.
Yeah.
And these things have giant engines. They're huge. Some of them have nitrous. They've got superchargers and things like that. So what you're saying, an electric car can compete with those guys.
Yeah, an electric car, the limiting technology is the battery. How much energy? In the case of a production car, you know, how much range you're going to get out of the battery, how much power.
Right.
In the case of on the drag strip, it's just you're trying to deliver all of this power over, you know, 10 seconds out of that.
Is it limited by conductivity actually going in there? It's just your current.
And the battery chemistry, you have the battery construction, which is anodes and
cathodes. Right, there will become an electrochemical limit to what you can get out of it at a particular rate.
Yeah.
But drag racing is all about low end torque. So, will this become like Ultimate Fighting? Will there be the electric car drag racing league?
Well, there already is. Well, let's see if I can remember what it's called. I don't think it matters.
Just the mere fact that it exists has blown my mind.
What's really happening is that it's happening already in motorcycles, where we're almost at parity, which is that at a given weight class, electric motorcycles are not quite beating gas motorcycles, but they're really close. It's probably 2 years away before they start getting scared. But they're already electric motorcycles. There's companies called Zero and Brammo and Mission, Lightning. These are all companies that are either purely racing motorcycles or doing racing and production.
Right.
There's a dealership here in town that sells one of those. But it's all about the battery technology.
But is it fair to say that, at least with regard to torque and acceleration, we're beyond parity for electric cars relative to cars? Because they can accelerate in general faster than a similar size, weight, class. Yep.
Well, what I just watched was this white zombie guy versus a Corvette.
Yeah.
And the white zombie actually waited a little bit. Like the Corvette took off and started going. He waited a second. Took off and actually beat him.
Yeah.
Caught up and passed him. This was like this little tiny white electric car versus
little
Corvette.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what I'm guessing is the reason we're not quite at parity for electric motorcycles is because the advantage of a motorcycle is it's really lightweight compared to its powertrain.
And those batteries are heavy still. So.
Yeah, and that's you start to see the weight of the battery.
And that's actually so right now when you have electric motorcycles racing gas motorcycles, what typically happens is they might lose them in the curves. So the electric motorcycle is heavier. If you got the same power, you know, there's a lot of trade-offs there. But sometimes they'll lose them in the curves, whereas sometimes they'll lose them in the straightaway. So that's where you're starting to see some parity.
Okay.
I wanted to talk about the energy storage technology. We touched on it with the battery technology. And this is what I refer to as my... there's something called the weekly battery tech story, because people are always asking me, hey, did you hear that story last week about, you know, batteries are going to become, you know, half the size and half the price and twice the power. And there's one of these stories every week.
Right.
And I probably didn't read the story, whatever he was talking about. It's there's a constant, there's an enormous amount of research happening in the industry right now.
Yes.
Everybody, because this is.
And a lot of it is happening at Georgia Tech.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, you would know about it. A lot of it has to do with, you know, chemistry, the anodes, the electrolyte. There's some that involve don't involve electrolytes at all. It's a solid battery.
So solid electrolytes, where you actually have ions diffuse through a charged solid matrix, and different ions. For example, silver ion has higher mobility than other things, and we've been struggling with this stuff for years. It's not hard to make a battery that does amazing things that will charge twice.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to make a battery that does amazing things that you can charge thousands of...
In this case, like, you need it for years and years and years. Every day.
Exactly. Right. So if you're going to use it once on the Apollo landing vehicle, you can blow a few $1,000 and throw several of those in there.
Yeah, you have...
Although, I think it was Scientific American or some different magazine I saw recently that was going to do the same thing that, like, we do with oil changes right now,
mm-hmm.
where you go on like 5,000 miles and change your oil. Mm-hmm. It'd be you go in after X amount of charges and you just drive in your car, they drop out your battery, put in a new one, and you drive off again.
So battery swap technology is an interesting thing because that has been one idea to get around the fact that batteries charge slowly. So when you charge a battery, you're talking multiple hours, basically.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so the one idea that's come along, there's a company called A Better Place, that had this...
Sounds like a daycare center for your cat.
Send my cat to a better place.
So the idea was that you drive in, and it takes 90 seconds to drop out a battery and put a new one in.
And that's less than it takes to fill your tank. So.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, and it's automated the same way like a car wash would be. You just kind of drive in, and there's a machine that takes it
and
out.
Like I go into the convenience store, and I get some kind of roller food, like that chicken taquito that's been there for a week. I have one of those for breakfast, actually.
Unfortunately, that has essentially failed in the market, and this has happened in the last couple months. They have been trying to pull this off, and in some cases it works. Where battery swap works is fleets, taxi fleets, any kind of a corporate fleet where you have control over what kind of car,
mm-hmm.
and it's a single kind of car. Because if you think about it, if you're a battery swap operator, there's 5-10 different cars on the road, and the car makers are absolutely not agreeing on the battery format. It's not like propane tanks, which is a similar model, but in electric cars, I mean, that's actually proprietary competitive information. GM has said this, publicly. They're not going to cooperate with other car makers because that is a competitive advantage for them. Exactly how would they size that battery? What is the physical size, the electrical performance?
Right.
There's, in the case of the Chevy Volt, it is... it has heating and cooling loops embedded inside that battery.
Oh, wow.
That's a very complex... What's
called, that is a complicated battery.
So and I'm guessing they did that to not go the same way as the 787.
Say again?
The 787, the Dreamliner with their batteries.
Fire.
That's a whole other...
Caught fire.
Yeah, heat transfer is an issue for batteries, especially when they're this big.
Yeah. So battery swap. And so it's just in the last couple of months that that company has kind of thrown in the towel, and they've basically retreated. They have two markets right now, Israel and I think Copenhagen or Denmark, where they have battery swap stations running, and they have fleets that are using it. But they've definitely stepped back and retreated to just... Let's just.
But if the entire government,
they've gone three CEOs in the past 6 months.
But if the entire government of a nation decides we're all going to use this one format for our vehicles, and you buy 20,000 vehicles like that,
mm-hmm.
so let me step back and make an observation here of an engineer from tech doing looking at all the variables in the equation, right? So a lot of people think engineers, and this is something my students suffer from sometimes, the good ones don't. They're like, well, I just have to optimize this objective function for this thing. Mm-hmm. The objective function is usually money, and it's really big and really complicated. So what you're saying is swap technology could work. What's in the way is literally the part that we make fun of over here, and that's the business part, getting people, what's in it for them, right? You have to be very creative to get these companies to somehow at least agree to only a few formats and things like that.
We live in a competitive capitalist economy, and we're encouraging companies to go out and take risks and compete. And if we enforce a battery standard on them, then we are limiting their ability to compete. So,
and this always happens. We're going to go through lots of iterations. This will probably one day be standardized. Almost everything is.
Yep.
But in the meantime, the learning curve is... it's painful,
yeah,
and it's slow, but it's actually, for engineers and for business people, it's actually probably beneficial.
And just to talk again about one key thing about the battery system, I mentioned the Chevy Volt has cooling, heating and cooling loops embedded in the battery.
Mm-hmm.
That is a key design decision that GM made to be very conservative so that they didn't have to worry about hot weather, cold weather, right, affecting the battery. Nissan, the other early entrant in the market with the Nissan Leaf, which is a pure electric car, they went for the low end of the market. So they wanted a cheaper, more affordable car. After tax credits, a Chevy Volt costs about $33. After tax credits, a Nissan Leaf costs about $23.
Which is like the price of a nice, normal little car anyway.
Or even less. Nissan this year has come out with a kind of a stripped version of the Nissan Leaf, which you can get in this state for 16-something, 17, with the tax credits. But the key is that Nissan went with a cheaper car. They have a cheaper battery system. That battery is not thermally managed the way that a Volt is, and most car makers now are doing. So Tesla has this, the Fords have this. They have those heating cooling loops embedded in the battery. And so that's one gigantic hurdle that needs to be we have to get over before we're doing any kind of battery standardization. I don't think battery standardization is going to happen anytime soon.
Right.
There's a running joke about hydrogen fuel cell cars, which is often brought up in these companies. Well, what about hydrogen and fuel cell cars?
It's actually exactly what I wanted to ask.
And the joke is hydrogen fuel cell cars are about 20 years away, and they always will be.
Uh-huh.
And so you can say the same thing about battery standard, battery swap. It's 20 years away, but it always will be.
But what about having a hydrogen fuel cell that then powers an electric motor, as opposed to having, like, it's kind of a constant power source?
So one of the fundamental problems with hydrogen fuel cells is the fuel delivery. Because you're not talking about pumping gas. You're talking about pumping something extremely high pressure hydrogen is a very light gas, so it's a very rare gas. So you have to rarefied gas. So you have to put it under huge pressures to get any kind of significant amount of energy in the tank. So you have to have a pressurized tank, pressurized trucks. The oil companies, the oil industry likes the idea of hydrogen because it's still a moving this liquid or whatever.
It's a fluid that they can send to and from.
But it's a whole different world in as far as the engineering involved. You're pressurizing it at extremely high pressures. And that net has not been shown to scale.
And plus,
scale properly.
No, just because the hydrogen, like hydrogen tiny atoms are so small that, for example, if you put hydrogen in a balloon, it just goes out. It doesn't even stop
inside.
It just
stop at the rubber. Right?
Yeah, it just flows right out because it's so tiny.
Yeah.
So you have to make sure that whatever system you have is so hydrogen tight that nothing can get out.
Well, so you actually made a good point before about, you know, this well to wheel kind of analysis. A big part of the reason why gasoline is not particularly efficient is because you spend a lot of burning of fossil fuels to put it in a tanker and put it in a truck and move these things around. The nice thing about electricity, and even though you do lose some energy transmitted over power lines, you don't lose nearly as much as what you spend doing those things. Yep. Hydrogen will have the same problem. And even if you want to get fancy, so for example, a lot of people anticipate in your tank, you won't have it under really high pressure. You'll have it under medium pressure. It will absorb on the surface of a metal hydride. But you have to have the honeycomb of stuff that takes up some of the space. That's expensive. That wears out. There's all sorts of issues with hydrogen. And when you take all that into account, I used to write proposals for the hydrogen economy program out of DOE. Hmm. We figured you needed a nuclear reactor every third block to make enough hydrogen to actually do this sort of thing. And I don't think that's ever going to happen.
There are a few of the cars on the road. It's kind of a demonstration, especially out in California. Honda sells a fuel cell vehicle, and they're selling it for some nominal price, let's say $50,000. But it's actually costing them like $90,000.
None of the fuel cell vehicles have even come close with any reasonable amount of subsidy.
Right.
So you're absolutely right.
Yep.
I mean, electric vehicles, you still have tax credits to do that. But do you anticipate there will come a time when the batteries get so good that we can dump the tax credits and it will actually be an affordable alternative?
Yeah, the DOE has said that their target is... So currently, when you get into battery pricing, they usually talk about dollars per kilowatt hour.
Okay, so the amount of energy you can deliver out of this thing.
Right. So like my car has a 16 kilowatt hour battery. The Nissan Leaf has a 24 kilowatt hour battery. The Tesla Model S, the high-end model, high-end version of that model, has an 85 kilowatt. These are size of the tank, if you will, size of the electric tank. And currently, that's competitive information, proprietary information, but the price per kilowatt hour is in the order of $500 per kilowatt hour.
Okay.
It might be 800 2 years ago. It might be 400 for somebody, 300. The DOE has a target within 8 years by 2020 of getting that down to 150.
Okay.
When they think that when they get to that point, it becomes sort of like hybrids, where just it's a no-brainer. You just hybridize the engine, and you just get this free this electric drivetrain capability.
Right. But the point is, you can add this to cars, you know, solely, or you can add it with a combustion engine, and it would actually be something that your typical consumer would actually buy.
Right.
And maybe you still need a little bit of the impetus, oh, well, it's good for the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's enough, then suddenly they can start making it worth their while to do that sort of thing.
Good for the environment is really what's selling the cars now.
Yeah.
But these cars do cost more up front compared against a comparable car. The payback time, it depends. It's around 5 to 7 years right now, the payback time, based on fuel savings. And most people like to see a payback time faster than 5 to 7 years. Not much faster, maybe 3 to 5 years. But right now, it's 5 to 7 years.
Okay. But there's no reason these cars can't last 10, 12, 15 years like modern cars. I mean, modern cars last a heck of a lot longer. I've got a minivan that we took on this road race last week, 130,000 miles, and it's still running fine. You know, you got to fix things on it once in a while. But I'm going to get at least 150,000 out of it. And I remember back in the 70s or the 80s, you had a car with 150,000 miles on it, the transmission just fell out at some point.
My dad's truck back in Texas, I think it's like 270,000, 280,000 miles. It's a 2007 Tahoe. It's not even that old.
Yeah.
But it's still running just fine. Yeah.
But if that were a 1967 pickup, it's really hard to get it to go that long. So that shouldn't be a limitation.
Counterpoint to that story, though, is my Mustang. It's a 2002, has 65,000 miles, but everything's broken on it. I've literally repaired every single part on that car.
Oh.
So.
Could that just be the lemon factor?
Mm.
Sometimes you get a lemon.
Yeah, well, maybe. I think it's just the Mustang. It's okay.
Right, but I've known people that have Mustangs that were okay. It depends on the year. It's like a fine wine. You don't really know. They made a design decision, didn't really tell people that. So you mentioned that it's the environmental thing. Is that why the only people I know that drive electric cars, at least that I know, and I'm not speaking for you, but or hybrids are sort of, you know, faculty hippie freaks?
Mm-hmm.
You don't see any good old boys with the big stars and bars driving a hybrid.
But what you're starting to see now that the Model S is out is there's a couple of them at Georgia Tech. Mm-hmm. Charles Isbell is an associate dean here who has one. And so now you're starting to get the more executive guys that would be driving a BMW M5 or 5 Series or 7 Series.
Okay.
Now they're getting these cars. And,
there was
a saying a few years ago that word of mouth on electric cars was going to be the best thing since the iPhone.
Uh-huh.
And Tesla doesn't have any marketing expenses. They are building cars and opening stores and service stations. They are not advertising. Tesla is not advertising. It's
except everybody talks about them. Everyone's just like, did you hear about the new Tesla car? Did you see it? There it was on the street.
But see, I know about
massive.
Tesla. And the reason I know about Tesla is because you turn on any PBS or science station and they cover it on everything from Mythbusters to Science Now, and they're like, "Oh, the wave," and then they just put some guy in there, and he comes back with his hair on fire, and he's like, "Oh my god!"
Because
that's what I say.
It's the new electric car that gets like 280 to 350 some odd miles per charge.
I've never seen that before. Not in a magazine, not in a paper,
and goes from 0 to 60 in 4.4 seconds.
That's right.
Like that's a car.
Yeah. Again, another guy who's an activist who says that the key is we have to put butts in seats, because you put a butt in a seat on one of these cars, even a moderate car like mine, and you see, especially Tesla, they just come back. That's how I got religion, actually. I started studying this in early 2008.
You took a Tesla
and,
test
in 2009, I was out on the West Coast, and I made an appointment, and they literally had me sign a waiver, and they threw me the keys, and they were like, see you in 45 minutes.
Right.
It was a Tesla Roadster. And I came back with my hair on fire. It's like, oh my God, this is, and that was it. My next car will be electric. Now, in my case, I got a car that's electric for the first 40 miles, and the gas engine kicks in as a generator.
Right.
So not really a hybrid. It's a little more complicated than that, but it's still.
People get confused about the Volt.
And
it
is a confusing car. And
they put that in their ad. They're like, wait, you're at a gas station. What's your problem?
I'm just going to the bathroom.
Yeah.
I did want to mention, we've been talking about the Chevy Volt.
And we're blowing off our second break, so let's talk about Tesla and whatever, and the what's it. But Tesla, of course, Tesla Motors, named after Tesla, the physicist, who did a lot of really good work in electromagnetism and magnetic fields. And
alternating current, you know,
Tesla
oscillating
is our modern unit for magnetic field strength,
A lot of AC. There was the Westinghouse Edison Tesla battles
century ago. A lot of things. Edison never really understood alternating current all that well, and then he tried to use it for electric chairs. And trust me, you put a direct current through a chair, you're going to die just as quickly.
This AC is dangerous. You shouldn't use it.
But I like to see
that was the whole argument between the two. So that's
get cool cars named after him. Think about it. Mm-hmm. What's you got Edsel. And then Tesla.
I'm driving
the only
a Westinghouse.
Times geeks have these. that would be cool.
I did want to give a little time to the. There's a few other cars in the market now. Okay. So those first three: Chevy Volt, Nissan Leaf, Tesla Model S, that get the most attention. Ford has actually done a few cars that they have on the market now. The first was the Ford Focus Electric, which is kind of like
I've seen that. Actually.
It's kind of like a Nissan Leaf, so it's a pure electric car. It's nicer looking on the inside and out, but it's the same idea. A pure electric car goes some mumbled amount of miles, maybe 80 miles on a charge. Pure electric. So at the end of the 80 miles, you better be at a charging station or back home or whatever. It is low volume, and it's what we call a conversion car. They have taken a gasoline Ford Focus, which is a hatchback, and left out the gas engine and gas tank, and kind of fit in a battery pack wherever they could, which is not—it's not pretty the way they fit it in. They just put this kind of block suitcase in the trunk.
And as I read, they're taking a bit of a loss on these cars when they're selling them.
It's this is Ford tiptoeing into the market. Yeah. So and it's low volume. It's there. I see it as kind of a curiosity. Ford is definitely looking into it, but they're not. It's not really a car that they're committed to. What they're doing more seriously is electrifying. Some of their other cars. So there's a new car called the Ford C-Max, which is like a Prius, but a little nicer. So that comes as a hybrid version, and it also comes with their electric version called Energy, spelled with an I at the end, E-N-E-R-G-I. Mm-hmm. Ford C-Max Energy is their plug-in hybrid hatchback car. It's been on the market for a few months. The Ford Fusion has an plug-in electric version, also called the Energy, Ford Fusion Energy. All these cars, they're basically hybrids plus. You can plug it in, and it has a bigger battery, and in theory, you can go about 20 miles pure electric in these cars. Mm-hmm. You can't go 100 miles an hour like you can in the pure electrics, but you can maybe get it up to highway speed and still be pure electric. So if you have a short commute, 20 miles or less a day, you could have one of these cars, and your regular daily commute is electric. If you need to drive further, it's no big deal. You just go into gas mode.
Right.
You can go on road trips. In my car, we drove down to New Orleans for Christmas, so that's still a possibility. Mm-hmm. But for your daily commute, the key is that the daily commute is
But say I'm daily commuting in here, and I can do it on a single charge, but it's these hybrids plus. I've seen charging stations here at Georgia Tech. Do we have a reasonable number of charging stations
here? Georgia Tech is actually... Hello, administration. You are way behind. They have one charging station over in the Fifth Street complex, the Spring Street deck, right across from the Arby's. There's Arby's next to the
Georgia Tech Hotel.
That is the only charging station I know of in Georgia Tech campus.
They do have symbols on our maps,
but they were experimental. They had them out there for short periods of time to try things.
Okay.
But I don't see them anymore. You're right.
Yeah. So the new standard is the AC. Charging standard is called J1772.
This sounds like an IEEE code.
SAE. Society of Automotive Engineers.
Okay.
J1772. That is the North American standard for electric cars. All electric cars have this kind of plug style. And so a charging station looks like a small gas pump
or something. Yeah.
It's got a little thing mounted on the wall. It's got a big hose with a plug on the end of it. And that plugs into the car. So I'm segueing into the other charging, which is, so that what I described is called level 2 charging. Level 1 is just plug into a regular outlet, and you can plug a electric car into a regular outlet.
But it's slow.
It takes forever.
Right. It takes about 8 hours. It'd be something you do like when
depends.
You're asleep.
It depends. Yeah. It's typically an overnight kind of thing. You get home, and that's how I use my car. I get home at the end of the day, I plug it in, it charges overnight the next morning. So every morning when I leave the house, I've got about 35, 40 miles free, ready to go.
Right.
And I call it free because, I mean, the electricity...
Right, the relative cost of electricity is
trivial.
It's
literature. I tell people it costs on average about $20 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And actually less than that for me.
Talking about these smaller cars, though, the ones that only get like 40, 60 miles per charge kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
that's perfect for someone like me. Like, I literally live right in the middle of Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as I'm going, I drive a maximum of maybe 20 miles a day.
Mm-hmm.
So that's perfect.
Yep.
So I get home, plug in my car, it charges again.
And that's the whole idea, is that 80% of our trips are these little short trips. And
to the grocery store or to wherever. Yeah.
Couple more I want to mention. Toyota actually has a plug-in version of their Prius. So it's called the Toyota Prius plug-in. That is probably the weakest one on the market. So it's it only goes about 10 miles, pure electric. And you would struggle to get up to highway speeds and not kick in the gas engine on that. So it's really more around town. But, you know, the Prius is such a juggernaut brand name.
Yeah.
You know, so many people know that Prius equals efficient equals Prius.
Right.
So, you know, honestly, Toyota is really selling based on that. As somebody had a Prius before, and now they want to get a new one, and they just opt for a couple extra, you know, a couple thousand more option for the plug-in. And the last one at car I want to mention, the one that I'm most excited about personally, is the BMW i3. The BMW i3 is not on the market yet, but it will be end of this year. BMW has been doing something very interesting. They have been going very methodically testing electric vehicle technology through a couple test programs where they, 3 years ago, they took the Mini, the little Mini car, and came out with a few hundred of those in converted to electric as a lease program. So basically as a kind of a beta test.
Right.
You can think of it as an alpha test because they did that car, ran that lease program for 2 years. Then they came out with a one series, so their smallest sedan called an Active E, and they're in the middle of that test program. So that would be the beta test program. And that same drivetrain is going to go into the i3 that's out end of this year. It's a powerful car, goes 100 miles electric. It will have an optional gasoline generator in it, what they call a range extender. So you can pay an extra couple thousand, and they literally take a two-cylinder motorcycle engine and stick it somewhere, they hide it in the back someplace, and that will be your gasoline generator. It's a little strange to wrap your head around, you know, with a smaller engine, a small gas tank, but when you think about it, it's a very compelling car right now.
Does it have the driving experience of BMW? That's what people buy BMWs for.
168 horsepower and rear-wheel drive. And, you know, BMW has always historically been a rear-wheel drive company. You know, they steer with the front and drive with the back.
And it looks really nice and has clamshell doors.
Yeah, well, that's key. What you're probably seeing is the concept. They have not officially unveiled the production car yet.
Okay.
But they have what you're probably looking at is the concept car. It's kind of a burnt orange.
Don't all concept cars have clamshell doors just to be a little weird?
But they also should be a little bit different.
Those are persisting. Those are going to be in the production car.
Okay.
So what you have is, so we're describing clamshell. The front doors, it's a four-door car. The front doors open normally. The back doors are smaller, and they're what they're called suicide doors. They open kind of the wrong way. Mm-hmm. And so when you open both doors on one side, you have this kind of big entry hole.
Right.
There's no pillar. What's called a B pillar. There's no B pillar.
Oh, okay. I mean, these are like these old caddy convertibles where you could pop these things open.
Exactly.
And this is what these giant cube cars are doing because you can fit anything in there.
Mm-hmm.
So cool.
Yep.
Cool. All right. Well, we've reached the end of the show, the portion that we like to call What Have We Learned? We've learned a whole bunch. So I want to thank Chris for being on the program and once again dispelling these typical myths about, you know, wheel to wheel analysis shows you that you're actually still doing better with an electric car. Number two, low-end torque is what makes them really peppy. But one thing I learned from you today that I did not last time is they're actually drag racing these things. To me, that is the coolest thing on the planet.
And they beat Corvettes.
And there are electric motorcycles. I did not know that as well, right? So they are not quite at parity simply because you're losing some of that weight ratio as you go down because batteries are heavy. Cars are already doing a bit better. And battery technology is improving every single day. A lot of new cars out now, including the latest versions of the Tesla Roadsters, which have always been amazing. so amazing. They don't really need advertising. I've known that for years, but I've never really noticed it until you pointed
it out.
Just
clarify, Tesla Model S is the new one. That's a big sedan.
Okay.
It's not
okay.
Not a little roadster.
And then the BMW i3, which is coming soon, mm-hmm. has interesting. It's sort of illustrative of the interesting combinations of engines and charging engines and mm-hmm. batteries and things like that. Mm-hmm. And it sounds as though we're going to be optimizing that for many, many years to come, yep. optimizing not only the battery, which is some heavy-duty research, much of which goes on here at Georgia Tech, but how we deal with batteries and swap technology, which works in some countries because it's operated at the fleet level, mm-hmm. can work. But the only reason it's not working right now is because we have different proprietary battery technologies. Mm-hmm. Some, like the Nissan Leaf, don't have heating and cooling, heat management inside the battery. Others do. And we didn't mention it, but, you know, that heat management isn't just so your laptop doesn't burst into flames. Mm-hmm. The efficiency and performance of the battery is a function of temperature. Mm-hmm. And if you live in Minneapolis versus Miami Beach, actually changing that mm-hmm. can have a big impact on things. Yeah. So I'm excited about electric cars. And if you are excited about electric cars, you should probably hit this weekend's Georgia Tech Auto Show.
Yeah, so the Georgia Tech Auto Show this weekend starts at 11 a.m. It's over on the west side of campus near the athletic facility. There's a big parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
There will be we're going to have a half dozen electric cars there, including a couple Model right. S's, but lots of muscle cars, lots of antique yeah. cars.
And if you look at 2013 Georgia Tech Auto Show, you'll find it. And I actually believe we have a link to it on insidetheblackbox.org. All right. So thank you so much for being on the program again.
Thanks for having me.
And if you've got a question or comment about this, particularly if you were one of our callers trying to get through Trent, I don't know where Trent is. He wasn't here
he
to screen our call. So if you had a question for Chris about electric cars, by all means, send us an email about it at comments@insidetheblackbox.org. We will forward it to Chris. I definitely want to make a shout out to our new listener who listened to our Honeybee Urban Honeybee Project last week and said glowing things about Jennifer Kraft Levy and sent that to us. We definitely appreciate that. And we appreciate all your emails and calls here at Inside the Black Box. Thanks to Eric Luckner for minding the board for us today. And we're going to get his picture up there so people know what he looks like.
One of these days.
After he gets a replacement beard trimmer and he's looking
a
little
better. Haircut hippie.
And a haircut. Yeah, I want a haircut too.
As always, our theme music is composed and performed by Bill and Mary Hunt. And we are a production of the WREK Studios here on the campus of the Georgia Institute of Technology. Please join us next week for Inside the Black Box, Science Only Funny.